My guest joins me, Caroline Biggs, Creative Director from the Cambridge History Festival. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Lee.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
So you're talking about the festival that runs from the 9th of February to the 25th of March.
Yes.
That's quite a long time, isn't it? Got a lot going on.
But we just get so many people who are keen to give us talks, and there's just so much history in Cambridge people don't know about.
And there's a lot to celebrate, which is what it's all about, as well as informing. It's in celebrating, isn't it?
It's a real celebration of Cambridge history, but the caveat I should add here is it's about the town of Cambridge, not that we want to exclude the university, but I think the town often gets overlooked in the history of Cambridge, which is one of the main reasons actually we started this festival. The town is rich with its own vibrant history and we want to tell it.
That's true, isn't it? When we think about Cambridge and history, it often tends to be pegged to the university.
It's King's College, that's the history of Cambridge, but there's just so much more. And there also there's a great town and gown history. It has been turbulent for centuries, and I think it still goes on. It does still go on.
So what is the overall aim of the festival?
Well, really, I always say it's to make local people excited about their own local history.
And how long has it been running?
This is the third year of the festival. And the great thing is, in the first year, you know, you think, oh, is it going to work? But straight away, people are really keen. And our sponsors, people were keen to sponsor us. People came to the events, which made them all viable. And there's been a real buzz about it. So we just feel so excited. I'm quite blessed.
Well, and it's not, you are exciting local people about their own town, which must be very pleasing to see.
Yes, absolutely. Because the university put on so many great events, but it usually does hinge around academia and the university. But again, which I'm not knocking at all. But this is a chance, you know, for local people to really take hold of their own
and dig down almost into the earth of Cambridge.
Literally, almost, because as some we do talk about the Fenlands, which is rich in many, many ways.
So, when you talk about history, what do you mean? Are we talking kings and queens? Are we talking working people? Are we talking living history, the present?
We're talking about the social history of Cambridge, what the ordinary people did, why they got up in the morning, what they might have worn, what they might have thought, and what was going on around them, really. That's what we're talking about.
And you've got some excellent people coming to talk, haven't you?
We have, yes, some excellent people.
What things are you particularly looking forward to?
Well, I'm really looking forward to Sean Lang, who is from ARU, is a lecturer there. And he's going to talk about Cambridge bonfires, which may sound a curious thing, but again, it actually comes back to town-gown relations, because on November the 5th, for about 100 years, it was a chance for the town and gown to really get stuck into each other, fisticuffs. And there were literally fireworks on the market square. And I think the police actually, in the end, just almost turned a blind eye to it, because they couldn't do much. But of course, the Proctors was always out trying to protect their students. Yeah, it was something, you know, which was I wish I could go back in time and see that happening. And yeah, it was really exciting. And windows got broken, you know, cars got overturned latterly. This is the 30s. You know, it was a very exciting, tense time.
There's always been that conflict, has there, between the university and the town?
Very much so, from day one, really, when the town thought, yippee, here's some rich people who've turned up, we can put the prices up. And the rich people thought, actually, perhaps haven't got as much money as you think, and you know, you want us to treat, we want you to be treated much better. And then the university proctor stepped in, even, you know, going back to the 16th century, you know, there were town and gown issues.
And I love the way the festival sort of looks at things with a sideways glance sometimes. You know, it's not a straight, as you say, a sort of chronological history. You sort of find the little unusual things and focus on them.
We do. I'm trying to find an example, actually, in here of things we're doing that are going to be different.
Well, there's so many, isn't there?
I don't know where to start. And actually, I would urge people to just look at the programme. They obviously want to convey as much as I can now. But you have to just look at the programme, really.
It is full. Talks, tours, workshops.
Yeah. Yeah. With about 16 days of events, you have to just look online, please.
And how long does it take to put something together like this, then?
It took me about 6 months, really. Yeah, getting people, getting ideas. And loads of people want to be involved, but we had to narrow it down a little bit. So we've got the best of the bunch here.
So you don't have a theme as such, it's just general history?
We don't have a theme, but ironically it's actually turned out to have a slight Victorian theme, because it kicks off with the Victorian Cambridge, with our opening talk, the Enid Porter Memorial Lecture. Just to say Enid Porter was the person who really sort of founded... Well, she's heavily involved in turning the Folk Museum, which is now called the Museum of Cambridge, into what it is today. So it's her memorial lecture. And Simon Schaefer is going to give a talk about science and industry in Cambridge in the Victorian period and about how ordinary residents got involved in that. I mean, though they were working with the academics and, you know, and new exciting things were being discovered, they needed a team of local people to support that work, as it wouldn't have got to where it is today. So that's where we kick off the Victorians, and we end with the Victorians with this absolutely wonderful dinner we're having, historical dining in Corpus Christi College, which is the town college. And we've got Dr. Annie Gray, food historian, talking about each course we're going to have, which is going to be Victorian food. And then Tim Hayward's going to come and give some, no doubt, hugely hilarious talk. And we've got the master of Corpus coming, you know, coming to welcome everybody. And we're going to launch our education fund at that event as well. That's going to be hugely fun.
Cambridge is just the perfect venue for a history fest. So when you're talking all this, you suddenly think, yeah, it is just so rich.
It is. It is because, I mean, Cambridge was an inland port. It had, had one of the fifth largest Jewish quarters in the 12th century. And all these things people just don't know about Cambridge.
Yes.
The ducking stool that was underneath the bridge, you know, and had the fight between the town again, who had to pay for the upkeep of the bridge. I mean, there's all this rich history I want people to know about.
Right, let's go back. Let's rewind. I can't let you talk about an inland port and a ducking stool. Cambridge was an inland port. Explain.
Yes, Cambridge was navigable from the Fens because it was the River Cam was tidal for a long time. A long time, I say, probably a couple of centuries. I'm not sure exactly, perhaps until draining the Fens, possibly. I'm not, that's around about that time. And so, you know, people could come from Europe easily, and because King's Lynn was quite a major port at that time. Again, because people didn't use roads. They weren't made up. They weren't safe. Yeah, so the riverways were the superhighways. And so Cambridge was easy navigable from King's Lynn. And then once people got to Cambridge, then the roads were okay up to the north, up to, into the Midlands, into London. It was more reliable then. And there were lots of little inland ports actually around Cambridge, like little ports at Burwell and other places. People just don't know about this history.
No, I didn't know that. And the ducking stool?
The ducking stool, yeah, the ducking
stool. That sounds a bit grim.
Yeah, well, it's terrible, of course. Yeah, I'm thinking of Trump today, actually. Funnily enough.
No ducking stool in Washington, unfortunately.
Yes. Yes, so there was this ducking stool, and there are reports, obviously, of women scolding women, which I think just means women who probably just stood up for themselves and wanted to say what they wanted to say, and men didn't like it. So there was this ducking stool to scold these women.
So the ducking stool was where? It was under...
It was under the what then was then called the Great Bridge. It's Magdalen Bridge.
Magdalen Bridge. And literally they would sit in the stool
and be ducked in.
It's not there now. Is there any sign of it?
No,
at
there's
all?
No, there's no evidence at all. Because I think the bridge has slightly moved from that period, actually, because the area's got a lot built up. But yeah, there was the ducking stool, and there's evidence about the town again fighting over who's got to pay. I think it's the 15 shillings for the upkeep of it.
Any excuse for a scrap between town?
Absolutely. Yeah, masses of them.
What's your background, Caroline?
Well, I've always been fascinated by local history. I was at ARU, I did a degree, and I concentrated mainly on local history. And it just came alive for me the more I heard about the history of Cambridge, which is, I think, is really why I started this festival. It's because I'd always lived in Cambridge. I thought, yeah, I know about the history of Cambridge. It's the colleges, it's this and that, you know. But then when I started to actually start to drill down about the riches and the characters, like Hobson's Choice, we all know that the Hobson. Well, it comes from Thomas Hobson, who was a Cambridge carrier. He had horses, and people, when they wanted to change horses, they didn't get a choice. They couldn't choose the best one. They had the one that was the most rested and watered, which obviously made sense for animal welfare. And so they got the choice that Thomas Hobson said, this is the horse you're having. You're not having the Ferrari brand, you're maybe going to get the Skoda, but this has got enough petrol in it, you know. So that's how it was. So there were little things like that in the spinning house where women were arrested for being prostitutes. Often they were innocent women. All this stuff. Oh, I could go on, but I won't now. There's this real richness of Cambridge. People just don't know all this stuff. And I really, over a period of time, hopefully the festival will continue for years and years, we can start to unpick this and get speakers in about these things, and people can learn about the history.
And you must have learned so much during the last 3 years or so.
Yeah, you can never learn enough. There's always so much more you start to find out. Like the ducking stool, I only found that out recently because last year I gave a talk about the history of the Bridge Street area, and I was just looking at some records and found out out about that. I hadn't known about it, and I was really excited.
Yeah, well, I will look at Magdalen Bridge completely differently now. So when you first started this 3 years ago, it was quite an undertaking to start a festival. It's grown since then.
It was a huge thing, but at that time we just changed the name of the museum from the Folk Museum to the Museum of Cambridge. A slightly controversial decision, but one really we had to make because there was so much confusion as to what folk meant. I mean, it's folklore, but a lot of people thought, is it about folk music, folk dancing? And it just became too confusing, really. And also because we're going forward with funding applications now, because, you know, grants are getting more and harder to get for the museum, you're having to rely a lot more on funding and grant applications. We had to be clear about what we were about. And I suppose in a way that gave us a great opportunity to almost rebrand. And so we are the museum that's about Cambridge. It's about the social history of Cambridge and the things we do at the museum, like capturing Cambridge project, collecting oral histories and tracing traditions, and a new project which is going to be about sort of Fenland traditions and lots of other things. Yeah, this is our big chance now to shout out about the great things we're doing at the museum and get people along. Just come in and visitors come to the festival. Get involved.
And the festival is for everybody, isn't there? Things aimed at every single person.
Yeah. I'm sorry we have to charge folks, but, you know, we have to pay for hire of things and printing and that, you know, but we keep the cost down as low as we can.
And are you giving a talk this year?
I'm doing a tour with Alan Brigham, again, the Bridge Street tour. I'm just so busy. It was a bit ambitious to do a tour on my own last year, but Alan Brigham and I are doing, so again, on Bridge Street, which is rich because the Bridge Street area is fascinating. And I only learned this relatively recently because that area was fought over for years. Because it was a marshland, basically, Bridge Street. It was a bit, much lower lying earlier on. And the Normans fought over it because that was where the access to Cambridge was, really, because that's where the Romans had pitched up and built a rough sort of crossing where the bridge, Magdalen Bridge, is now, and where the castle was up on Castle Hill. And so that was, so strategically, it's a very important area. And so the lowlands of Bridge Street, they were fought over because people were always trying to invade Cambridge. The Romans, the Normans tried to, and various East Anglian tribes, the Angles came, the Mercians came. You know, there was all this fighting going on for years in Cambridge over this boggy landscape.
It's absolutely fascinating. I could talk to you for hours. I really could. If people want to go to any of the events, the Cambridge History Festival, the best website to go to is the Museum of Cambridge.
It's probably easiest to actually just go to the Museum of Cambridge website, and you can just click through to the programme then. Or you can just go to Eventbrite and put in Cambridge History Festival, both ways.
And it's 9th of February to March the 25th, so yes, plenty of time to get to kits.
Yeah, although a few things are selling out. We've got the Pink Floyd tours have got one more ticket. Actually, my tour with Alan Brigham has actually sold out. A few tickets are getting close to selling out events. So, yeah, don't sort of hang about.
Move quickly. Well, good luck with it.
Thank you.
It sounds fantastic. I'm going to come along to some of those events.
You're very welcome.
But, you know, you start to look at your landscape differently, don't you, when you know the history about it, when you know what those stones and those bridges have seen.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that all these people were Cambridge people who lived here the same as we do now. They were like us. They didn't have the things we have.
Lovely. Well, thank you, Caroline. I hope it goes well for you. Thanks for coming in to chat.